amateur, the word comes from French, amour, from the heart. So it's giving it heart, right? So if you've got the love of something, call yourself an amateur. And if someone's willing to pay for an image, then you're a professional.
Welcome to the Power Hour, the weekly podcast that will motivate you to pursue your passion and to achieve success. I'm Adrienne Herbert, international speaker, fitness coach, Adidas global ambassador and entrepreneur. Each week, I'll be talking to today's leading coaches, creatives, change makers and innovators to find out their daily habits, morning routines and rules to live by. The Power Hour is all about taking just 1 hour each day to help you improve your life and unlock your full potential. Whether you want to build a business, write a book, run a marathon, or maybe you're just looking for a spark of inspiration, the Power Hour is going to help you get there faster. Welcome back to the Power Hour podcast. It is so good to be back. Today's guest has been a professional photographer for over 20 years. He has traveled around the world and has worked with the biggest brands on the planet, such as Adidas, Nike, Formula One, Nissan, Red Bull. His images have appeared in Vogue, Harper's Bazaar, and he has photographed everyone from sports stars to fashion icons and supermodels. Wow. Welcome to the studio, Nathan Gallagher.
Thank you very much for having me.
So good to have you here. Honestly, I mean, I'm happy to be back in the studio. I think I definitely got that point across. And also that you've been so generous in giving us an hour of your time. Nathan, you are a busy man. The last time I saw you was at my house and we did a shoot together. You shot the new headshot, which is going to be inside the Power Hour book.
Wow.
I know.
It's a privilege.
I mean, I'm up there with all of these, you know, Harper's Bazaar, Vogue and the Power Hour book. So we've worked together quite a few times over the last few years and we always have great discussions. So I was really pleased when you said yes to coming in. I know that we're going to have a lot to talk about. So for anyone listening who doesn't know much about you or what you do, can you tell us how you first got started in your career?
Well, my old man was a photographer, amateur photographer, but very prolific. And so I learnt the ropes from him in his darkroom. And then I was assisting other photographers and working my way into being a photographer myself. I started out professionally in action sports. So I was just shooting snowboarding and skiing in, I was living in Colorado in America and photographing for magazines back in Europe. And then from there, traveled around Northern Europe, Scandinavia and North America quite a lot. Taking photos of that is quite an amazing start to a career. Not much money in snowboard photography, but okay. I tell you what, the lifestyle was amazing. I enjoyed that.
Wow. Okay, so how did you go from one to the other? So you learnt from your dad, you know, snowboarding. Were you into snowboarding? Could you snowboard yourself? How did you?
Yeah, I mean, to do any sport properly, to cover it, to photograph any sport properly, I believe you need to be really invested in it. Now, I'm not saying that all people who shoot 100 meter sprints have to be able to do a sub 10 sprint, but I think they need to understand what they're shooting. And with snowboarding or BMX skateboarding, it's essential, really. You can tell as a skater when someone shoots a skateboarder who doesn't skate. You can just tell straight away. So the same with snowboarding. And I could snowboard, I can snowboard. And obviously to get to these locations, you need to be able to get from A to B carrying a lot of kit. So yes, I love snowboarding. I still do it to this day. In fact, I went recently, name dropping, let's start the name drop. I went on a snowboard trip to Japan recently with Lewis Hamilton for 10 days and we stayed in this lodge and went snowboarding. It was amazing. And so, yeah, so it's still part of my life, but not as much professionally as it used to be.
Wow. Well, I was going to ask if you had any, you know, mentors or who inspired you to pursue photography, but I guess if that was your dad, were you like, what was school like for you? Did you always know that's what I want to do? Or was it kind of a hobby or?
No, I mean, it was definitely a hobby. And I think that's something which anyone who's into photography and looks at it from a professional level might start questioning, when is this a hobby? When is it professional? Like I tell people, when you asked me the other day, like how long you've been doing it for, 20 years is a good round figure. It's a little bit more than that. And I take that from the first day that my first image was published. I actually started as a hobby. And so an amateur is the opposite, people think, of a professional. But amateur, the word comes from the French, amour, from the heart. So it's giving it heart, right? So I think that's quite important to realize for people. You can be an amateur with passion about something you do, and the only then the only mechanism for defining professionality is invoicing. So if you've got the love of something, call yourself an amateur, and if someone's willing to pay for an image, then you're a professional. So that didn't really answer your question.
No, I really like that though, and I think it's a nice way. You know, I mean, hobbies, do you remember those? Do you remember when people used to have hobbies? I think the world has kind of, in my world anyway, changed to say to people, if you're good at something or if you enjoy it, monetize it. You know, so if something's, you know, whether it's yoga, whether it's cooking, whether it's baking cakes, if you're good at it, you should sell them. If you're good at, you know, photography, if it's in a hobby you enjoy, you should upload them, sell them. And I think that actually for a lot of people, if they enjoy something and it's a hobby, when it becomes work, when it becomes charge, you know, it changes, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really interesting you say that, because this recent lockdown period, in that period, I decided that I was going to build myself a darkroom. So going back to when I started out with my dad, really messing around in his darkroom and probably ruining his experience of it, because I was young and stupid. But now, so I built a shed in my back garden and built a darkroom, and I'm printing and I'm shooting and printing in that darkroom for no reason apart from following my muse. And that's still a hobby. So photography is my job, and it's also one of my hobbies. It's very much, and I think it's really important to kind of separate the two. You can do tests, and you should do tests, which can ultimately end up as work. But you do that from, well, at least I do that from a commercial standpoint. So I'm looking at something which somebody might want to buy, rather than just going, wow, that would be nice to, that building has nice light on it, bounce that onto someone that, for no reason apart from just to make a nice picture. And so I've decided that I was going to like really take action and focus on that, if you pardon the pun, but focus on that quite dramatically by building a shed darkroom.
Nice. So I guess, well, working in the creative industries in whichever way has its highs and lows. So what would you say has been, you know, a standout moment? I know we've already name dropped and all the rest of it, and we could probably go on and on and on, but could you give us some highs and some lows of your career?
Yeah. So lows are easy, because I think it's probably common with everybody. There are, like, I currently work independently, so that means I'm not with an agency, or I don't have an agent, so I do a lot of shovel work on jobs, and that's to my advantage in some respects, but a lot of times it means you're doing a lot of work which is nothing to do with photography, and you get nothing from it really, and it's not why you're in it. You're not in it to create spreadsheets and do risk assessments, but the downsides, I think, are when you feel like you're doing more of that, and also carrying kit. Oh, God. Photo kit can be ridiculously heavy, especially lighting and stuff like that. And I've already mentioned the snowboarding stuff, but even when it's not on mountains, just moving stuff about and everyone's wrapped and you're there with all the kit and you're having to take it back to the studio. And when I say it out loud, it doesn't sound that bad, but it really does get you down when you've given all your energy to the shoot. So that sucks. But high points massively outweigh it. I've got the best job in the world. Like, it is incredible. And I shouldn't say out loud that people pay me for this. I did a job years ago now, 2009, it would be 11 years ago. And I can still remember, it's so good to this day. I went to the Arctic on a Russian scientific vessel up the west coast of Greenland with Jarvis Cocker, Kate Tunstall, Leslie Feist, Martha Wainwright, Jonathan Dove, is the opera guy, and Laurie Anderson, Marcus Brigstock, Shlomo, all these incredible characters, all on this boat, like Steven Zissou kind of life aquatic moment. And I was there just to document the goings on. And there were proper artists on that boat. And my work was then eventually used in the book as one of the artists. And it was a real validation for me that my images stood up to that critique. And to this day, I still look back at that job as like just insane, absolutely incredible. And you do have moments, and it's super important to appreciate them and to relish in them and not feel like you have to say like, oh, it's tough. Like, when you're standing in a position when you think, I can't be anywhere better than I am at this very moment in time. And that could be sitting playing Lego with your kid, or like could be whatever it is. It's just super important. I don't know if it's a British thing, but we kind of used to go, how's it going? Oh, my back's aching a bit. You know, you feel like you want to say something negative, so you don't want the other person to feel like you're living the life of Riley. But in truth, I think it's super important to like just be stoked with what you've got going on, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course. Yeah. Noticing and celebrating those moments for sure. And I guess, you know, for a lot of people working in the creative industries, I think longevity is something that is really difficult. You don't get to build a career like you have without being, you know, incredibly hardworking, without being fun. You know, you're always fun. Every time I've ever worked with you, you know, we have a lot of fun. You're someone who people want to work with and probably be around again. So, you know, do you think that, yeah, what would you say has helped you to kind of, I guess, sustain and a career over such a long period of time? Because things have changed, right? We're going to probably talk more about that. But photography's changed a lot in that time. And yet you've still, I guess, yeah, you're still out there, top of your game.
Yeah, people sometimes come to me and say, oh, my kids wants to be a photographer. And what course should they study? And what should they do? What's the best advice you can give? And stuff like that. And yeah, you're right. Getting longevity within the creative industries is inherently difficult. You do need to coin someone else's phrase, adopt, adapt and improve, right? So you have to adopt what's going on, adapt it to your own vibe and then improve on it so that you're offering something that somebody else doesn't do. There's been countless times I've done that, but in terms of actual business and sustaining business, I believe my best asset is getting in the room. So get in the room with someone. It's difficult during COVID, admittedly. Get in the Zoom. That's awful. Can we delete that? But get in the room is a huge bit of advice, because you can create the best website. You can have the most amazing book. You can, you know, all these things, and you send them out. But ultimately, that's almost a prerequisite. You've got to be able to take the pictures. That's not what people are looking for. Sure, they'll look for a style. Art buyers need a style. That's a different conversation. But when it comes to what I do, and I am the first to admit, I am a jack of all trades when it comes to photography, and that variety is part of what I enjoy. And when it comes to hiring a photographer like that, you're looking for someone that you can work with, right, that can take on board a creative idea, make it their own, but also not be like, no, this is the way it's going. And I find that relationship, that sort of flexibility, is something which has stood me well, I think. So my advice would be, yeah, get in the room, be a nice person. It's better to be nice than it is to be right sometimes. And I think that's true. I think it's true. The long game, it's definitely true.
Interesting. Okay, better to be nice than to be right. I'm definitely going to think about that a lot. It's really landed for me. I'm like, I'm just thinking about, you know, work and dynamics of relationships. I think that's a really important thing to think about. And also, you know, I think being in the room, oh my gosh, that's me all over. Like, if I meet people and I love to, yeah, I'm an extrovert, right? I love to talk, I love to be around people. And I always say that to people. I think even if you're introverted, I think it's so much more memorable. And I think now it's quite easy, right, to do the digital thing, to send a message or an email, or to, as you said, upload some work. But I think making the effort as well, people really appreciate, I think, when they've met you face to face, and that people have maybe made an effort to travel or to give up their time, as I said, with you coming here today.
Right. And also once you've done one of these shots. So, for example, a lot of the times I get brought in to photograph somebody who is extremely famous, whose time is ridiculously valuable, who wants to be on set, look good and then leave. Right. And being able to deal with that situation with alacrity and enthusiasm means that you can only know that really once you've done it. So that's a huge disadvantage for anyone trying to get into the industry, right? So you have to sort of be able to project that onto someone. When you walk into that room, be friendly, casual, easy to get along with, because that's what you're going to have to do when you're photographing whoever you're photographing, right? Mm. So I think that's a really important part of what I do. It's being able to do something with speed and enthusiasm and still make it look good. That's a prerequisite.
Wicked. So the world of photography, as we just mentioned, has changed so much in the last 10 years. And the way we take photos, share, view, it's all changed. And I mean, you know, smartphones, Instagram definitely changed the game. So how did this impact your work, and how did you innovate and adapt?
Well, first off, the medium, the change from film to digital was massively affected what I did. When I started out, you would only shoot on film. I shot on slide film, which is positive film. So instead of getting negatives, you get positives. The slides, which you can view, and you then get them scanned and printed. So if you imagine you're trying to work for multiple magazines and you've only got one slide, right? there's, what do you do there? So you have to then be very conscious about where that goes. You can make copies, of course, but those copies are never as good as the original. And so that whole process was something that you protected and you could use to your advantage as a photographer. Now it's changed, and so the pluralistic nature of digital means that your image is everywhere. And so that's great in some respects, but it also means that there is a dilution going on, because when you send your image to a magazine, they naturally assume that there's no exclusivity there. And then they ask, is this exclusive? And there's a trust issue there. But by having your images all over the place at the same time, they're naturally viewed as less valuable. And I think it's brilliant that everyone's got a camera and everyone's a photographer. And you're right, it's very easy to take a good photograph these days. The actual art of photography is no longer the art of exposure, right? There is definitely an art to exposure. You saw today I bought in a film camera and I'm choosing my exposure there. And I don't get to see it until I develop it. There's still an art to that when you use your phone. I'm currently in the middle of a project where I've got a couple of remote kits, which are ones right now in Vancouver and the other ones in Malawi, and I'm doing a project where I'm photographing people in their homes remotely, and I'm using iPhones for that. I'm actually photographing people with iPhones, with the iPhone 11 Pro, which has got some pretty good cameras on it. But you make choices for the exposure there, but the truth, the actual content of the image is ever so much more now king than it ever was, right? So It's a really interesting analogy, but people, you always meet people go, you know what I like? I like black and white photography. Like anyone says that they don't, you know, oh, I like color myself. No, everyone loves black and white. And the reason for that is because it gets you to the message, the content. You're not distracted by colors. So you can look at a picture, which ordinarily might be pulling your eye in all different directions, and you just focus on the emotion in the image, the face, for example. And so the same way, the same thing sort of happens when it comes to digital stuff. So you're taking a picture, bam, take another picture, bam, take another picture, and you can shoot thousands of pictures, right? So then if you're doing that, then what makes the difference between someone shooting one picture every 5 minutes, someone shoots 500 pictures every 5 minutes? If it costs no more money, then what's the difference? And the truth is, the difference is thinking about what you're trying to make before you make it. Sorry, I'm waffling here, but does that make sense?
No, it does, absolutely. I'm fascinated because I love photography. I'm somebody who, you know, I don't so much use my big cameras anymore, probably for that reason, because smartphone cameras got better. But I used to, you know, carry around a big camera and a big heavy lens, and I used to save up money to buy them. And yeah, I love everything from candidly snapping strangers, which sounds strange, but, you know, like walking around a city and taking candid snaps, to, you know, like composing an image, and everything from, as you just described, from the light. But also for me, it was more around thinking about like the framing and the composition. And I love it all. But I think one thing I was thinking then when you were talking was, yeah, I guess when you think back to using film, I don't know, I definitely feel like there was more of this, you know, like you said, you probably only had one chance to get it right. You had to, you know, get everything right, take the shot. You didn't know what it was going to look like probably until after that. To me, I just think the pressure, but also the kind of preciousness of what you then, you know, the outcome, as opposed to, as you said now, being like, right, you've got 1,000 frames. Oh, this isn't working, change it, take another. Oh, move this, take another. And you can just, like you said, come up with hundreds, maybe thousands of images, and kind of cheat a little bit and, you know, do things like quicker, and obviously shutter speed is faster. And yeah, I think,
yeah, it's true.
I mean by cheat is like I could do like a jump or a specific position, and it's a split second, but obviously, mm-hmm, because it's static, it can look like you're holding that position.
Yes, you know, I see what you're saying. Yeah, so you can capture, but then what happened back on set in film, and you know, people still shoot film, so it's not like it's completely defunct, but the trust that goes on between the art director and the photographer. So the art director, okay, this is what we want to do. You shoot Polaroids so everyone gets an idea of it, but ultimately you don't actually see the images until they've been processed. With digital, it's not uncommon for me on set to be shooting, and there'll be three people on set looking at the images, critiquing them, and somebody somewhere else in the world who's looking at it live online and critiquing as well there. And so what that does is it removes some of the trust from the photographer. And that's why it's really important that I work with the right people, because while I've got no problems with other people's ideas, what can end up happening with that is you interrupt the flow of the shoot and the relationship between me and the subject. So if somebody goes, oh, stop a second, that collar needs to be adjusted. I know, I've seen the collar. I know we can deal with that in post. And there's more value in continuing on that that thread that I've got going with the model or with the subject than it is for someone to jump in and do checks, right? So that sort of thing with film would never happen. You know, I can see what's happening and I shoot film. So the more I'm speaking, the more I think I should go back to film. But no, I love digital. Digital is completely changed. And the platforms as well, obviously Instagram and stuff like that, in good and bad ways.
Well, I was going to say, with things like apps and filters and the fact that everyone can kind of edit instantly, you know, what would you say it takes now for someone to be a good photographer?
Well, a bit of education for people listening. I think there's a misunderstanding quite a lot. People say Instagram filters and Photoshop is ruining photography. There's always been filters. There's always been Photoshop. Photoshop is basically a digital version of what we do in the Lightroom. Like, there's a famous Grace Jones cover where she's doing that incredible arabesque, right? You know the one? And it looks impossible. And it is impossible. In actual fact, if you look it up, you'll see the amount of work that went into that image. And it's literally a photograph which has been physically cut up, or a slide that's been cut up, pieced back together, and then physically brushed back in. So airbrushing comes from physical brushing. It's always been there. So the idea that digital has done the dirty on photography is not fair on digital, really. The speed that you can pop a filter on, and the fact that you've flip the process around, whereas usually you'd put filters, you'd deal with filters or the equivalent, i.e. film stock, paper stock, literally the lenses you use, the filters you put on the lenses, all happens before you shoot or before you process. Now with digital, you shoot raw, which is essentially, when people say raw, again, important you understand, it's not a file format that you can see, it's just the data off the camera. You're passing that further down the corridor of production and saying, okay, we'll decide what film we're shooting on later on. And it's just switching it around. So I don't think that digital is responsible for this situation that we've got ourselves in now. I think the situation with social media is ever so much social media's fault. And I think that the overuse of filters and adjustments to body image, skin condition, and thing, it's a very obvious negative to everyone's well-being. And there's some great documentaries out there, which I don't know. Can we mention documentaries?
Of course, yeah.
So there's that new one called The Social Dilemma.
Okay.
It's really worth watching. And it talks about lots of things, but one of the things it talks about is this social body dysmorphia and the idea that people are trying to attain through plastic surgery what they can attain through filters. And
wow,
it's insane. And it's something which needs to be addressed more globally. But I think Photoshop is something which is great, because it's there, people know it's there, and you can say, right, don't use Photoshop, and then we know it's not being used, right? When you're dealing with filters and Instagram and apps and stuff like that, you can say, I've had no Photoshop done on this, but look how amazing. So you know what I mean? The verb of Photoshopping and stuff,
yeah.
It's not an evil technology. It's just one which needs to be used carefully to enable everybody to understand where reality stops.
Yeah, what reality is. Because I think that's, you know, to that point, it's like when someone's wearing makeup and not wearing makeup, and you could photograph someone with makeup on, you know they're wearing makeup, you know? So I think to that point, I mean, it's a whole rabbit hole, but I'm definitely going to take a look at that documentary. And I guess, you know, wider than photography, how do you think digital has impacted creativity in general? So for example, across everything that I, you know, whether it's music, whether it's fashion, whether it's photography, you know, people can now see, I guess, and copy and try to recreate your work or somebody else's, or they can feel, you know, inspired by different art, culture, life from around the world 24/7, because we now have access to so much. So I guess, like anything, right, there's a two sides to every coin, but yeah, I guess creativity in general, how do you think it's been impacted?
I think it's amazing. I think that the impact on creativity has been nothing but beneficial. I think copyright laws need to be rethought, because that's another conversation, really. But just briefly touching on it, copyright is a really important part of photography. When I photograph something in the UK, I automatically own the copyright of that image. When I'm commissioned by somebody, they, as part of my day rate, get a license to use the images for a very specific thing. In fact, the way that my pricing structure is structured is quite a common one of a creative and license structure, where if, for example, you were to employ me to take photographs for your Instagram channel, you'd get one day rate. But if you were photographing for a billboard campaign, you'd get quite a different day rate. And so copyright is very important. However, there is a stifling nature of copyright, which stops creativity, I think. And it's from an honourable place. But now I feel that you can end up in a position where you have a whole industry around copyright theft. And what it actually does is it stifles the ability to create based on influences. And digital has enabled influenced creativity to accelerate at such a rate. We are bashing through epochs faster than ever, because before you'd have to wait till something got published before you could see it. Now something's published instantly. And so we are, if you imagine a graph where you could see a new project and how many influences it had, you'd see those influences grow and grow and grow as time went on. Well, that has shot up because you suddenly have at your fingertips not only everything that's being created today, but everything that has been created in the past and really easy to search. And I think that's great, because ultimately, what are we trying to do with creativity? We are trying to enliven our lives. We're trying to enrich our lives, create grabbing imagery, be it moving or stills. And I think if digital can help that happen with a greater speed and agility, then it's got to be a good thing.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Nathan, you've worked with some mega superstars. We mentioned loads at the start, but you photographed stars, sports stars such as Andy Murray, Cristiano Ronaldo, supermodels like Jordan Dunn and Rosie Huntington-Whiteley. You must have some stories.
Yeah, I can't tell you any.
Oh, really?
No. Well, well.
You don't have to tell us the names. Any divas? Come on.
Yeah, AJ Adodu.
Yes.
Absolute diva.
She's going to love that.
She won't work for more than a quarter of an hour without some sparkling wine.
She's
going to
love that.
Yeah, yeah. So, stories. I mean, everyone asks about people like that. Like, it's interesting. I don't know much about football, right? I'm not a huge football fan. At least I'm not like I'm against football. It's not my bag. And so when I tell people I've you know, had a kickabout with Ronaldo, they kind of like go, what?
You know. In just a pair of pants. Him, not you.
It's funny to say that. So this was going to be the story I told you, because I knew this question was coming and I might get in trouble for it. But basically, so I've done a few campaigns with Cristiano over the years. I've not done any for a while, actually. But he's great to work with. He's an absolutely unique human being in lots of different ways. And I'm not just saying that. I think everyone does. You find people interesting and you imagine what it's like to be them. I think that's natural. And so when you meet them and you sort of see how they react to situations and you understand the pressure on those kind of shoots, it's fairly big, you know. Anyway, so one of the underwear campaigns that I did with him, it was a real kind of dramatic lighting and like real dark space and a kind of what we call a Caravaggio style light, which is probably doing a disservice to Caravaggio, if I'm honest. But still, it was lovely and really nice. And it was part of a larger shoot and we got it done and he was wrapped and off he went. And we had a bit of time left in the studio. And so I put on some of the pants, not the ones he was wearing, obviously. There's, you know, there were loads of pants around. So I put on a pair of the pants and I stood in the light and my DOP took a photograph of me in the pants. So that fan, so I put that on Instagram as a kind of joke. Like, well, I sent it off to Ronaldo.
I'm holding my breath as to where this is going to go.
So I was told Ronaldo found it pretty funny. But I sort of put on Instagram and then I got a phone call from the agency and they were quite sheepish. And I was like, what's up? And they're like, you know, that picture of you in those pants, could you maybe take that down? I was like, what is that?
Not the pants or the picture?
They take the picture down because the brand's worried that you might be bringing the brand into sort of the wrong vibe. So basically, my body is that milky and hairy. It's a disgusting but accurate description. They thought that if people saw that on my Instagram account, it might make the brand out to be comical as opposed to be luxury. So,
oh, wow. That is the ultimate curse. I'm sorry, Nathan, but you're not on brand for us.
My bad. It's that bad.
Oh, that's pretty savage. Actually,
I thought that was quite funny. And so, of course, I took it down. But the image still exists. I'll show you afterwards.
I can't wait to see it. And I also want to see the image of Ronaldo in the pants too.
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult. It's like spot the difference. but yeah, so that's a nice story because it means that it doesn't involve him. But no, he's great. And he people ask, what's he like to work with? And like a lot of honed athletes, like proper professional, not ex-professional athletes, but on the literally in the height of their career, they just want to do their sport, man. Like, right. He just wants to play football. That's all he wants. He just wants to play football. He's got his brands. He's got his businesses going on. But like, so I shot him after he'd lost a game of football, and like I had to shoot the whole campaign in like an eighth of the time we were allotted. It was ridiculously quick. But then I shot him a few months later for a different campaign, and he'd just won like 3-0 or something. And he hung out on set afterwards with us when we played football, and I was doing headers with him and dancing. I danced, not like intimately, but dancing on set. He said that I was really, really bad at dancing. But yeah, so like, I think any athlete like that, and it's the same with business people, and you know, I it's not just like models and sports people that I shoot. Anyone, their time is one of the most valuable things they have in those situations. So I find that my popularity with those sort of people is directly proportional to my speed.
And I guess, you know, you're an absolute pro, but do you ever feel starstruck? Did you, I mean, you know, I guess at some point when you first started working with big names and celebs, and did you ever think like, oh my gosh, it's them?
Once, only ever once. And it wasn't the first people that I shot at all. It you never know how that's going to go. And I've never, I think maybe because I'm so focused on what I need to get done, and they're just one part of the ingredient, one ingredient to the recipe of what needs to happen. But the one time I got starstruck with was Sir Ranulph Fiennes, because I read his books and I know who he is from when I was a kid. Like, he was like a hero, absolute, genuine, one of the last remaining proper explorers, you know. And when I met him, he was late. He was hours late for the shoot because he got arrested in America, which is a long story, but it was amazing. So, like, they say never meet your heroes, but he was so apologetic and gentlemanly about it. And everything about him was exactly what I wanted as a small boy. Yeah. And so when I met him, I really had to keep it together. And it was quite a complicated shoot because we were shooting four explorers, and by their nature, they're difficult to get in the room at the same time. So we had to shoot them all individually and comp them all together. And it was so it was a technical shoot. So I just had to sort of, like, you know, put my business hat on. But he was just absolutely amazing. And it, that's the thing, I think, what I got starstruck about, because I hadn't realized how much I wanted that to be so. You know, until it was happening, I was like, I'm so glad he's really that cool a guy. He's just an amazing character, and everything that his books describe. So that was great. Apart from that, everyone I've worked with, like, it's just one professional meeting another professional. Yeah. And that's not bigging me up. It's just, you know, that could be the makeup artist, that could be the guy doing the lighting, like holding the lighting stand, whatever it is. Professionals working together, they just, you know, yeah, that's how it is.
You've got a job to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I've stayed in touch with a bunch. Like, you end up pals with some pals. Do people use that word?
You can.
Stand up pals with some people and, you know, call them friends now. And yeah, that's cool. But that's not like the aim of these things, of course. It's just that happens just like it does in normal everyday life.
Okay, amazing. Nathan, I could talk to you all day, but I do want to talk a little bit about the Power Hour. So before I do that, this is going to be my quick fire questions, which I don't normally do. So let's see how that goes. One top tip and piece of advice for anyone who wants to get started.
Spreadsheets.
Ooh, okay, didn't expect that.
Learn spreadsheets. You're always going to need to know. No, I mean, learn spreadsheets, but yeah, practice your craft. Like, but yeah, learn how to run a business.
Business acumen, get organized.
You could be the best photographer. In fact, some of my favorite photographers in the world are not professional photographers. By choice, they don't want to be. They just want to take pictures.
Okay.
Make your decision. If you want to be a businessman, be a businessman.
Nice. Okay, people ask you often about kit. What kit should they get? What kit should they get to get started?
To get started, whatever kit you can get your hands on. The important thing is not what's in front of your eyes, it's what's behind them, right? Mm. That phrase might sound trite, but it's so true. You can get, like, you give Ansel Adams an iPhone when he was alive, and he will produce a better photograph than I could with the best camera in the world. It's not about what's in front of you. Mm. It's about what's in your head. And work on that with whatever you've got. Find any camera you can. Don't obsess over cameras. They're not important. When we do our big shoots, I hire all my cameras. There's no way I'm going to spend 45 grand on a camera. I mean, I've spent a lot of money on camera kit. Yeah. That's wrong. But the point is, the cameras we actually use for big pro jobs, they're so recent and up to date, you could never keep up with it. So we hire them in. The kit's not important. Your brain is.
This is the quick fire round.
Sorry.
You know that.
Sorry.
Last one is, what is the favorite, your favorite image, photograph that you've ever taken?
Or that I've ever taken? I wish you'd warned me of this question. Oh, that's really hard, because you've got successful images commercially. You've got images that are close to your heart of personal things, which other people wouldn't necessarily see as being a great image. And then you've got technically incredible images, which you know what went on to get that image, right? So it's actually quite an important point when it comes to creating your website and your book. It really is very difficult to do, because you know so much that went on behind the scenes. So I don't know. Probably one on that trip to the Arctic. Probably something there, just because of where it went and how I felt at the time. Mm. It's weird. That's a really tough question.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's move on to talking a little bit about the Power Hour. I don't know how much you know about my Power Hour. I know you know that I'm an early bird. And essentially, the Power Hour for me is all about taking the first hour of your day, taking that time to do something for yourself, making it whatever it is, whether it's creative, whether it's exercise, meditation, reading, whatever you want. So I'd love to know a bit about your Power Hour. And if you have one, what time do you get up in the morning? And what's the first hour of your day like?
Lots of coffee.
Really? Okay.
I know, like, you have a lot of variety of people on here, and it's fascinating to listen to what people say. I feel like I'm letting the side down a bit, because my mornings are so routine, like, in terms of, like, coffee.
What time?
7.
Okay.
7 or a little earlier, because I've got to get kids to school. Mm-hmm. And so there's that, and then, like, making them breakfast, just the whirlwind that is the morning. I'm not on top of my day until I'm, like, about 10:30 in the morning.
So coffee. How many coffees are we talking?
Oh, it varies. I think if you keep it single figures, you're doing all right.
Wow, Nathan.
Sorry. No, that's not quite true. No, I mean,
hey, I'm not judging you. So coffee's the first thing.
Yeah, coffee's
the
first
thing. Are you a coffee? No, I'm going to go there. Are you a coffee snob? So some people are like, I have to grind the beans and do the thing. Like, you can't even, you know, it has to be.
I just got to get it in me quick.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
fine.
No, it's an espresso. It's not. I appreciate a good coffee.
No frothy milk.
Yeah, yeah, I'll have a cappuccino. Okay. Yeah, I'm not a savage. But, like, it's like, but I'm not going to. Oh, I'm going to sound so bad in this interview. The I just got to get it in me. Get caffeine in me.
Caffeinated up.
Caffeinated, muesli. I've recently tried to start doing yoga in the morning. My back is. We need to talk about this, because my back. I'm doing it all wrong.
Okay.
Self-teaching yoga. We do.
So you need to switch to Pilates.
Oh,
if
right.
you've got back pain, then Pilates is going to be...
Well, I think the yoga causes the back pain.
Yes. Pilates. We're going to talk about it offline.
All right. Okay. Well, offline.
So you're going to add Pilates to your morning routine?
That's it. If I had an extra hour, because, like...
That's coming up, by the way.
Oh, is it?
You know,
okay. All right.
Jump to that.
Oh,
but kids to school. And I guess, you know, probably always different schedule changing. I mean, COVID life. Who even has to get dressed and leave the house?
Yeah, right. I mean, back in the day when we had shoots on, you know, you could get up at 4 in the morning to get to a location on the day, because they wouldn't pay for a travel day the day before. So, you know, you end up in situations when you're on the road that the hours don't mean the same to you as everybody else. You work when the light's right and you get it done. But then if you've got more recently the COVID time where it's a bit more scheduled, then yeah, it's sort of get up, coffees, kids to school, get on my bike, get to the studio. settle and crack on.
Wicked. No, I love the honesty because a lot of people will be relating, nodding, going, yes, that's me, Adren. Not everybody wants to get up at 5:30 and run 10K. So yeah, coffee in, and that's...
I look at your Instagram and your early morning runs. I feel so inadequate.
No. It's not about that. Everyone's got to do their thing, their way, but it works for me. And honestly, Nathan, I feel like, you know, you have seasons, right? So you right now you're in your yoga season.
Yes, I'm definitely in my yoga season. Yeah.
No, it's all good. Okay, so before I move on to asking you my closing question, if people want to get in touch, if people want to see your work, if people want to get inspired by what you do, maybe even reach out, where can they get in touch?
So I'm on the Instagram quite a bit. So Nathan Gallagher on Instagram. My website's nathangallagher.com. My Twitter's @NathanGallagher. It's kind of all quite similar. But I mean, do reach out though. Like if somebody's like got a passion, they're like, can I do this? Or somebody, you know, quite often people ask me, like, someone's trying to buy a photograph of me.
How much should I charge? Yeah, those
just
kind of things.
Ask. It can't hurt to ask, right? Yeah. I believe if a photograph's worth using, it's worth paying for, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, I'm there supporting photographers who aren't even photographers, you know. You're a photographer if you think you are. We are who we think we are. No, hold on, what's the quote? Yeah. We are who we pretend to be.
We are who we pretend to be.
Yeah.
So we must be careful who we pretend to be.
That's right, yeah, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
I really like that as well.
So you could pretend to be a photographer just by picking up a camera. You can pretend to be a professional photographer by selling an image. But yeah, just reach out. Sorry, go back to the question. Yeah, look at my Instagram. Leave nasty comments. I don't mind. My Instagram game is bad.
Well, actually, Nathan, maybe again we'll talk about this offline as well as Pilates, but I feel like I would appreciate if you upped the game, only because I know the amazing work that you've done. I know all the people you've shot. And sometimes I'm like, he is not selling himself. Instagram these days is like everyone just being like, you know, it's like an online CV or whatever you want to call it, right? It's like a calling card, it's whatever. And so I'm like, drop some of those pics, Nathan. Don't be yeah, modest.
Yeah, I guess because of the way that I'm structured, all my work comes from people who I know or people who recommend me. So like, this is kind of, I guess, a little thing. Don't rely on Instagram to make your money, man. I mean,
we probably should have talked about that because I think people now it's like, oh, how do I get more followers? Because if
important.
I have more followers, then I'm going to get more work. And for certain things, potentially. But yeah, I think that the definitely in the last maybe a year or two, I think, you know, you can have 1 million followers. It does not matter if, you know, what you're putting out to the world. And I think, you know, if you have a skill and a talent and all those things, it doesn't matter how many Instagram followers you have.
I mean, when people listen to this and then look at my gram and realize how few followers I've actually got, they'll realize it doesn't correlate. And you could end up with 1 million followers and just be an influencer who takes pictures rather than someone who's respected necessarily as a photographer. Mm. The two things don't necessarily go hand in hand. So, my Instagram game is bad. I'll be first to admit that.
How many followers? 17? 18?
It's definitely in the teens.
Okay, so my closing question for you, Nathan, which almost jumped ahead to, is about having more time. Because often people say, if they had more time, oh, I'd do that, Adrian. Or, you know, I wish I had more time. Then I'd do that. Then I'd listen to that. Then I'd read that book, etc. So if you did have one extra hour every day, there's now 25 hours in every day, what would you use that extra hour to do?
Ride my bike. Yeah. I love riding my bike. It's the best. And I don't do it enough. And I'm supposed to do 100 miles on Saturday. And it's going to kill me. But... yeah, that is a place I go. That and playing piano is where I go when I need to forget everything. Because you can't focus on anything apart from riding your bike or playing the piano when you're doing those things, right? So, an hour of my version of meditation, which is hurting my legs on a bike or hurting my brain on the piano.
Wicked. I've absolutely loved having you here in the studio. So thank you again for giving us your time and for being here. If you enjoyed the episode, then please do get in touch, reach out, share it. Remember to rate, review, all that good stuff, and send it on to someone who you think would like to hear from Nathan. Thanks so much for listening. See ya. Have a great week. Thanks, Nathan.
Thank you very much for having me.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.